Gurave Gaur Chandraya Radhikaya Tadale Krishnaya Krishna Bhaktaya Tad Bhaktaya Namo Nama. So, good morning to all of you from North Carolina. And as you may know, we are beginning today a new series of lectures under the label of radical personalism and transformative reframing of experiential devotion. So that's the title of our series. Let's see how long do they last and where do we end. And today we have our first lecture. So to begin with, I'm very grateful for your presence, and thank you so much for sharing your attention and your very contribution by the very fact of existing and lending your ears and time and attention, which is a very crucial part of the equation in this attempt of service. So first of all, my gratitude to all of you. And today we are beginning again with our series. And today's talk will be kind of an introductory talk, lecture introducing the series in themselves and a few topics from to mention from which perspective I'll be trying to share some thoughts. Mm-hmm. So today's first lecture, the title is Upgrading My Loyalty as a Gaudiya by Critiquing My Own Tradition. So, as I mentioned when I shared the flyer, I think probably this title may require some explanation. So I'll try to do so, mostly at the end of today's lecture. But the idea is to begin sharing a few words about the very title of this series, which is, again, Radical Personalism. Mm-hmm. Of course, in one sense, what I will be sharing throughout these lectures, in one sense, it's the very same things that I've been trying to share throughout these years. It's not that I will be sharing something completely different, radically new or whatever. But probably what will happen is that those topics will be shared from a more specific, if you will, point of view, as life tends to get sometimes more, of course, specified from different vantage points. We may address reality in one way or another. So, of course, in my own particular personal experience, having gone through some interesting recent dynamics in my life, I hope that also that may add to the contribution in trying to engage everything in service. So there won't be a fixed number of classes. I don't have like a specific idea in mind, although I share some general topics I would like to speak about. And I shared some of those topics, but for each one of those topics that were announced in one of the flyers, probably I may need more than one lecture for sure. But somehow each of those topics will be an attempt, as I mentioned, to address the main issue or the main concept and topic of the series, again, radical personalism, from different perspectives. What does it mean, radical personalism, from one perspective, from this other perspective? So to begin with, I'd like to share some thoughts about the very notion of radical personalism, which we have been invoking, if you will, recently. So to begin with, well, this is a term that was coined recently by Bhakti Rasa, so she's to blame, in case you like or you dislike the notion. And I couldn't but fully resonate with that when she mentioned that, although, of course, at least in terms of aspiring to such an ideal, never to think, I'm that, I'm there, or whatever. We are the full embodiment of such a notion, but that sounds like a tempting prospect, to say the least. So what's the meaning of this? No? Of course, the word radical, the very root of the word radical comes from the Latin radix, or connected to the root. So radical has to do with something that is connected to the root. implying that whatever is in connection to that radical whatever, that radicalism, will be something to the very core, if you will, whatever it may be. And that this is not a negative word, although sometimes the word radical may be used in negative connotation. It also has, of course, its positive value. So in this case, the word radical, to the very core, to the very root, goes next to the word personalism. So in other words, radical personalism will mean personalism to its very core. And what's the meaning of that? What's the reach and the implications of that? So radical personalism. We have, for example, in Vedanta, one form of Vedanta, Advaita Vedanta, sometimes it's termed, or we call it sometimes impersonalism, to create some contrast. Sometimes it's called radical non-dualism. So non-dualism to the core. There's only Brahman. Everything else is false, illusion. So that's a radical non-dualism as a form of Vedanta, as an expression of Hinduism, if you will. But also, of course, as you know, we do not only have Advaita Vedanta, but also we have another forms of Vedanta, theistic Vedanta, which are non-dual in their foundation, but which are theistic as well. They are not radical non-dualism, but they are theistic, if you will, non-dualism, or personalism. I mean, our own tradition fits into that category as well as many others. So we have radical non-dualism, and we have theistic non-dualism, impersonalism and personalism. So we start to get acquainted and accustomed to these concepts. Please do, because I will be invoking them quite often. So we belong to a personalist tradition, to a non-dual theistic, monotheistic tradition. And in our case, in our particular tradition, Gaudiya Vedanta, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, I would like to refer to Gaudiya Vaishnavism as radical personalism. We are personalists to its very core. Because in our tradition, as you may know, God is, we could say, as much as a person as he can be. And God is a person. But how much of a person he can be, remaining God, but being a person. No? One thing not making the other disappear. And so in our tradition, for example, when we invoke the concept of Sri Krishna, God is as much of a person as he can be, as much as a diversified individual as he can be. And therefore we call him the supreme personality of Godhead. No? It's God. Is a person in its supreme personality. No? So the highest reach of personhood of the supreme person. That's Krishna. Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam, we will say as Gaudiyas. The supreme personality of the supreme person. So that's radical personalism. I hope you follow me. But that's just the beginning of the radical personalism in Gaudiya Vedanta. Because on top of that, we have that this Swayam Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, Braja Krishna, Supreme Personality of the Supreme Person, is trying to taste the personality of Sri Radha as well, in the form of Sri Gaur Sundar, Sriman Mahaprabhu. So then you have another layer of personhood, of radical personalism. So this attempt of this supreme personalized supreme person trying to taste the personality of Radha is, that could be labeled as the climax of all personalism, if you will, the apex of all specified experience. And that's our deity, Sri Chaitanya Dev, Gaudiya Sampradaya. So in this regard, even we can connect, and why, a play of words, why Krishna wants to taste Radha's mood. No? This is radical personalism. And in this case, we can connect the word radical with Radhika. No? Sri Radha, another name for Sri Radha is Radhika. So who is Radhika? She who, to her very core, is radical. She's radical in very ways, in how she loves Krishna. In her very root, her whole being is absolutely concerned only with divine love. So that's radical. And she is Radhika. I mean, we could say that's why she's known as Radhika. In one sense, of course, no? Which is in its very root, I mean, divine love is her very root, her very own existence. She's the embodiment of divine love. So she becomes the ultimate personification of divine love, radical divine love, to the point that God himself wants to taste her experience. This radical project called Gaur-lila. So all this has to do with the notion of radical personalism. This radical personalism in this way is ultimately another way to referring to and honoring the radical person of Sri Radhika, if you will. Her radical love, and how Krishna himself wants to honor that radical personal form of Radha in his radical personal form of Mahaprabhu. So again, we have radical with H and K, radical personalism, the personalism of Sri Radha. So just for you to start to connect this idea of radical personalism with Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So Sriman Mahaprabhu, the deity of, if you will, of radical personalism, he himself gave a path. No, his school of thought is called Gaudiya Sampradaya. So he gave a path called Raganuga Bhakti, basically. And that's also, I like always to call the path of Raga Bhakti as the path of specificity. A very detailed path, very specific in connection to, again, all that we can be as individuals. Bear in mind the concept of radical personalism and the two words, not only radical, but also personalism. So Raga Nuga Bhakti is a path in which our individuality, in which the concept of individuality, specificity, details, all of them are expressed in their deepest form. All of them are properly honored. So all things considered, if you put all this on the scale, how personalistic is our school, our deity, the process that is given to us? Well, the main question, if you will, that we may be asking to ourselves throughout this whole series will be, okay, given that we have such a ultra hyper personalist deity, an ideal, such a detailed practice, such a specified goal, where are we standing today? Not tomorrow, today. As a group, as a community, as an individual practitioner, in terms of radical personalism. Because our deity is radical personalist. The process, the ideal, all is radical personalism. Where are we standing in connection to such radical personalism? That we are supposed to embody, that we are supposed to represent, that we are supposed to long for. So where are we as persons? That's a question we can do every single day of our lives and find a new answer every time. So are we working on an individual, on our individual situations, on our collective situations, as personally as we can? Are we doing that homework? Or even there are shades of impersonalism, or even more than just shades in some cases, in how we conduct ourselves in our life. All of these may be in the guise of radical personalism. So we will try to reflect about this. We represent radical personalism, but how much we represent that, and how much the opposite may be happening in the name of what we apparently represent. So there have been movements under the name of personalism, apart from what we are talking about here, in different parts in the West especially. And in generally, the notion of personalism has to do, of course, as you may imagine, is a stance which emphasizes the importance of people, of persons, of individuals. And again, for us as Gaudiyas, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but of course these notions, as we will see, extend beyond our own specific tradition, but I'm talking from that perspective now here. For us, to be a person does not only mean to, which also means to properly integrate who we are as Atmas and the potential of the Atma in the context of Bhakti, yes. But also, personalism means to to integrate properly our humanity, including our body, including our mind, including our emotions, in service to the soul's potential in bhakti. So in other words, how can we be all that we can be, again, today, not tomorrow, as devotees, as individuals, as human beings, as Atma, with bhakti in between? And are we doing that? Are we doing all that we can do to be all that we can be? Again, not promoting neurosis, but just healthy rethinking, reframing. How much we are doing all that we can be to engage in radical personalism. How much we are, by extension, facilitating that to others. Because first homework goes at home. Homework means at first go home. Then you can do other work outside of home. So which are the full implications of being persons? We are persons, which is the full reach of that, which is the full responsibility and implications of being people, and which is the full implications of God being a person, and us being a person, and which is the full possibility of both of us, God and us, relating to each other as persons. We have to play out those ideas. What's the meaning of being a person? What's the meaning of God being a person? Be careful of just regurgitating copy-paste dogmas and thinking you have the perfect answer to all these questions, and that's all. That's all that you can say. We'll try to go a little bit beyond that in this series. So, regarding God being a person, for many of us, I will say that God is basically a theological concept. Well, actually, he's a real person, but how much we relate to God as a real person, that's, of course, something we have to ask and solve ourselves. But in many cases, God still remains as a theological figure somewhere. But actually, he's a real person, closer than what I think. And he's not only a real person, of course, he's the most real person, and the most personal person, ultimately. He's impersonal, he has his impersonal side simultaneously, but regarding his personhood, there's nobody as personal as God. So if God is a person, he's then a living person. No, he's not just a person, like a statue-like person, a static, frozen in one cloud somewhere else. That's not a person. I mean, we are only interested in relating to such a person. So if he's a person, he must be a living person. And if we are also persons, hopefully we are, we must also be living. We must be alive. Ideally alive in every sense of the term. Again, not only alive. You put some cotton, he's still breathing, he's alive. Continue. No, but what does it mean to be living? What does it mean to be alive? For us and for God. And what if God and the soul embrace each other, again, in a mystical, ultra personal proposal such as Gaudiya Vaishnavism, which is again personalism to its very core, then such a movement, such an embrace, such a school of thought, sampradaya, all of that must be a living thing. No? Our school that proposes this embrace between two living people. The school of thought must be a living school itself. It's not just a school, it's a living school. So therefore, everything must be here in this school, in this proposal, must be alive, must be vibrant and in constant evolution for it to fit the demands of radical personalism. For it to fit the demands of reality itself. I mean, radical personalism is not a new creation. That's just the nature of ultimate reality. We are labeling that, if you will, with that particular name, but actually that's reality in itself. So all this is alive, is evolving. As long as that stops being the case, or we lose sight of that, we stop being persons. Everything starts to feel more and more depersonalized. That's a correct word? Okay, depersonalized. Impersonal. More and more dead, if you will. The contrast of being alive. of participating in something living. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't be surprised. Interestingly, in the scriptures, in our Gaudiya tradition, there are many expressions pointing to that, if you will, state of inertia. No? Like, for example, the Bhagavatam says, Jivanapi mrito hi saha. The Bahuti is saying, that person is dead despite being alive. Jivanapi mrito hi saha. It's alive, jiva, but mrita is dead. Or Pashuknyat, the Bhagavatam says, dead like. The Upanishads would say, Atmaha, a killer of the soul. Again, of course, Satma, Atma cannot be killed, as Krishna says in the Gita, but the point here is, if you are not all that you can be, you are not who you are, basically, because you are all that you can be. So, and these verses and these sections of Shastra do not only refer to, because someone may argue, "Nah, Maharaj, that section speak about the non-devotees, the karmis, the demons. They are the ones dead, but we are devotees, so we are alive." Well, as much as you are a devotee, we could say that, as much as you are a mystical, awakened soul, but this does not only refer to someone who is not a member of your school of thought, but to any even member of this school who is not doing all that he or she should be doing for upgrading their personhood in devotion. So this applies to each of us. Not being all that we can be under the shelter of bhakti. Don't try to point at someone else. It's right again, begin at home work. Homework begins at home. So, so again, this criterion should be applied both individually as well as collectively. That's what we are trying to do in this series, to rethink and reflect, starting at home, but in the context of the particular living school we belong to. So from this perspective of radical personalism, in this series, we will be trying to explore together, don't leave me alone in this adventure, we'll be exploring some of the necessary reframing that needs to take place so devotion remains what it is, something what it should be, something relevant, something relatable, something experiential, alive. And we will try to do so by analyzing, again, the reciprocal relationship between the framework, again, of Gaudiya Sampradaya, Gaudiya conceptions, and in connection to this, the practitioner, the sincere practitioner, and how both of them should inform and nourish each other, basically, for a constant, actual, real, transformational experience to happen. We all need that. We all want that. And how to keep our tradition upgraded as what it is. Again, a living school of divine love. Nothing less than that. Gaudiya, that's what, at least personally, I think that's it. Gaudiya Vaishnavism as it is. No? Following the words of Srila Prabhupada in his Bhagavad Gita as it is. Gaudiya Vaishnavism as it is, and we as all that we can be, if you will. Now we can say also Bhagavad Gita as all that it can be. And that's why Prabhupada said many times, we can write many more purpose to this, because this is what it is, but it can be so much more, and that's what it is. So many things have been said about Gaudiya Sampradaya, and that's all what it is, but all that it can be, there's no end to that. So we can never establish a final word about these things, because the very nature of this subject matter is an ending. So anyhow, that was a little first part to begin with, trying to put in context from where we will try to explore these different topics in the context of the idea of radical personalism. So now let's move to another section where some kind of preface. Today will be again some introduction to the whole series. So I'd like to go to a preface, somehow mention a few words about my present situation in the sense of the awkwardness, but also the advantages of the particular liminal space in which I'm in. Of course, you may already have gone through some of the lectures I gave on this, what shines in the darkness and so on. But a few words, because from that particular angle is that I'll be trying to to share what I will share in this series. Mm-hmm. So as it is said, mm-hmm. this saying that says God comes this to you disguised as your life. Mm-hmm. So indeed, he came these last months to me as such, very interestingly, and turned everything upside down, inviting me to reframe, to rethink, to recalibrate basically my whole life from tip to toe, which is a very interesting project, as you may imagine. And of course, it's not my plan here to bore you to death with the details of these last months. I've probably already done so. So I'm just briefly mentioning that since all that happened put me not only in a very awkward situation, not necessarily in a negative way, but also simultaneously gifted me with a very unique vantage point from which not to see not only myself in a new light, but also reflect about the condition, again, of my own person and all that I would like to be and all that I can be, but also about other people and, by extension, our entire Gaudiya Sampradaya as a whole, and even beyond that, you know, reaching other traditions and every single person in one sense, every single entity. So it was a very interesting situation to follow what Srila Siamaras will say, change your angle of vision. So this series will be an attempt to share some of the insights that this present situation has gifted me with, you know, as a way of being grateful and expressing gratitude, and embracing whatever has to come and trying to make of that something that is worthy of sharing and hopefully nourishing others' life. Something happens for some reason, or everything happens for some reason, as they say. You know, things don't happen to us, things happen for us. No, because just one word can make the whole difference from victim consciousness to openness to reality. So regarding the what we may call the challengingness of the present situation, and my present situation, I would say that yeah, the present scenario is very uniquely challenging, and the challenging is there not only for me or for those involved, if you will, in it. In the situation closely, but even for the many who may have been witnessing the unfolding of a situation from a distance. And by challenge in this point, I do not refer to how things unfolded and the details of it, but specifically that I'm in such a liminal space at present, I'm still there, that in one sense, many people basically cannot figure me out. And that's challenging for them and for me as well. Interesting challenge. No, I mean, people cannot immediately put me in any of the typical boxes in which most Gaudiya Vaishnavas seem to fit. And that's a little bit like, what to do? No, ISKCON box, no, Gaudiya Math, Sri Chaitanya Sangha, great big Babaji's, this mission, this other mission. And sorry, at present, I don't fit in any of those. What to do? So indeed, a type of anxiety lurks in people that are not able to label you very quickly. No, and beyond my situation, no, but that happens. If some people may ask you, like, what's the box you belong to? Of course, they won't ask in those terms, but that's the question. And probably me, along with some other weirdos, if you will, may reply, I don't know, do we actually need to belong to a specific box to begin with? It's like, what's going on? Or anyhow, we don't know which box we belong to. Or we are actually collecting materials to make in a new box because we don't fit in any of the existing ones. And probably by the time the new box is ready, it's time to make a new box because we no longer fit in that one. We have grown out of that particular box, so we need to break that box that we made and discover a new box. So that has in itself produced, I would say, some anxiety for some people, not with any bad intention from any part, but that's the case. Now, if you are out of any box, then you, and interestingly, you are probably invited to thwart or forced to think, as they say, outside of the box. No? to understand a situation where someone doesn't fit in any of the usual boxes. So by saying this, of course, I'm not blaming anyone. I'm not criticizing anyone in particular for the situation in itself. It's for the need of people to put you in a box. That's my point. I mean, that's a need of human psychology. And even probably a survival instinct, you know, to put everything and everyone in their corresponding box. So reality somehow makes sense. You know? Some order. You know? We have chaos, but order also needs to be in place. Although chaos, as we will see, has its balancing aspect in that. But the thing is that if something doesn't, if this box fitting doesn't happen very quickly, and you have two or three guys who do not fit in any of the standard labels, again, we may start to get nervous. I've noticed that with some people writing to me like, Babaji box, Maharaj? No. Gaudiya Math box? No. ISKCON box? No. Sahaja box? Probably. No. And the person will say, but those are the four boxes I have. I don't have a fifth box. So sometimes in those cases, we may put that such a person in another box, or maybe it's not even a box, like we will throw that person to a trash can, no? Aparadi then. If you don't fit in any of my box, Aparadi or Deviant or maybe Blooped, depending the case, and we have another series of trash cans or something. But the question is why we are resorting to that labeling mechanism that we very quickly need to throw someone into a box. Because again, we are in that situation because we are not able to accommodate people in a new way. So we need to force them into some of the standard boxes. And that's our problem. If I'm not able to accommodate you in a box you need, that's my problem. That's my lack of accommodation. That's my lack of hosting capacity. As I mentioned in my recent book. We sometimes don't have hosting capacity. So if we don't have too much hosting capacity, or in other words, if we don't have too much ability to coexist with paradox for some time, then to be okay dealing with sometimes with situations that we cannot figure out, we cannot fully accommodate very quickly, if we don't allow ourselves to remain in that space, we then run the risk of, again, becoming very quickly tribal and ostracizing people, quickly putting labels so everything is in place. And I personally think that this is something that we as a community, and speaking here about the wider Gaudiya community, and of course, as individuals, therefore, we need to work a lot on that, as I'll try to elaborate throughout the series. Mm-hmm. Now, we need to work a lot with those things that are out of the box or out of the norm and know what to do with that, even if you would like to think about that as exceptions to the rule. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because our Gaudiya Sampradaya is a tradition that specializes, if you will, in ecstasy or post-liberated life and what's going on in the beyond, and all the nuances and details of ecstatic emotions and developments, and it's great. But if we want to go there, I mean, if we want to participate again in this living school, what to speak of reaching this ultimate realm of ecstasy, first we have to understand the meaning of ecstasy. The very etymology of the word ecstasy means departing from the norm. So, if you want to enter a world of ecstasy, you understand that's a world that is departing from the norm. So if you cannot deal at present here with those things that depart from the norm, how do you expect to enter into a whole world which is made upon that foundation? So we need to learn how to deal with this, again, paradox and things that do not fit our boxes and standards, which depart from the norm, and not necessarily label them quickly in negative light or something, but learn to coexist with that. Mm-hmm. So as I already said before, in this connection, there is people that think, I will join this Babaji or that Goswami or this mission. I want to enter into the details of all the ideas and proposals and things that have come. Some people think I'm start my own mission and I become a guru or who knows, all the possible varieties. But I'm not planning any of those things at present. I'm open to, of course, to whatever is necessary at this point for me as an individual, and of course, by extension, for others as a community. But again, without any bad intention, of course, people again feel the need to put you immediately in a box, because if not, they don't know what to do with you. It's interesting to see that social phenomenon. But by putting you in a box, that's a way of being in control. Because you are put in that box, everything is in order. I'm in control. That's a way of controlling people, basically. Putting them in particular boxes. Because they feel, oh, now I can figure you out somehow. Which is another way of saying, you belong to a certain box, and therefore a whole series of labels, preconceptions, and even judgments follow naturally your being in that particular box. And that's how many of us actually relate to one another on a daily basis. Unconsciously, I'm not saying with bad intention, but unconsciously, this boxing and labeling is there as a way of keeping ourselves in control. Mm-hmm. Even in the name of Sadhu Sangha, we are doing that. We are relating to one another, but putting all these invisible labels in our minds. But again, that's not Sadhu Sangha. That's in the name of Sadhu Sangha, but that's a depersonalized relationship. That's technically speaking impersonalism. Although you may not be saying Soham, Aham Brahmasmi officially, but unofficially you are promoting impersonalism. Because we are not allowing the other to be the person who actually is, or who they can be at present, or who they need to be. And we are feeling the urge to categorize everyone as soon as possible. So, only through that process we end up experiencing some shanti, some peace, some relief. Everything is in control, which is a total lie. Because that's not actual peace. By throwing everyone into their corresponding box that you think they belong to, that's a false relief coming from an apparent notion that I'm still in control. I know where everyone belongs to. So this is in part the zeitgeist or the climate of the times that somehow I'm interested in addressing through this series, at least in part. A zeitgeist in which we generally don't take the necessary time and energy that it takes to actually know a person. And that's again all in the concept of radical personalism. Knowing a person and relating to the other person as who the person is takes time and energy. And if you are a personalist, you will invest that time and energy and not quickly label everyone in their corresponding boxes. Again, I'm not saying that everyone is in that situation. I know that many people won't fit into what I'm describing here. So through my words here and throughout the whole series, just for you to know, I'm not like making an absolute statement that every single person in the Sampradaya is doing this or anything. But whatever resonates with you, that's idea, or with me to begin with, in my case. So for me, again, it's not only awkward to be in this situation that I am personally, but it's also awkward to create further awkwardness in the minds of those who cannot figure me out in my present situation. That's another interesting layer of awkwardness. I mean, I'm not complaining. It's what it is. It's what it is. That's it. So some people, of course, may be inspired with how I'm trying to navigate my present chapter. But others, I'm sure, may feel me as a threat. But by the very fact of not fitting into any of their usual boxes to begin with, I mean, I may be felt, perceived as such. And I understand, it's okay, that all of us needs structures on some level or another, different size of boxes. But I've been put into a very unusual new box, and I cannot deny it either. I mean, I cannot go against my present situation. It is what it is. So here I'm not trying again to play the victim, to play the hero, to play the martyr, nor even pointing to any so-called perpetrators. It is what it is. And not only this what it is for me, this is what it is for any one of us, each one of us. So that's my particular situation, but also at the same time, my specific individual situation also goes beyond itself, beyond my situation, and somehow points to a collective pattern, I will say, on some level or another. A zeitgeist, again, a climate of the times, a sign of the times, in which the Gaudiya community, at least in part, finds itself today, and from which it needs to grow and mature for a brighter and sustainable tomorrow, if you will. So I'm also concerned in that direction. No? Like everything in life, personally, at least, I feel the need to engage in certain upgrading, and I know I'm not alone in that. And some things that we have experienced in our past years and decades or more nourished us, but at one point, as everything in life, I mean, what nourished you at one point becomes suffocating at another point. And it's not that it was suffocating all the time, no, but it had its purpose. So what inspired my faith on day one may choke my faith, if you will, that same faith on day two. In the words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, today's perfection is tomorrow's imperfection. There is an ongoing necessity for further upgrading. And this, again, doesn't mean that the inspiration of day one was not genuine or something. It just needs upgrading. Because it was genuine, I concern myself to make that all that it can be in day two, and day three, and day four. Do you follow the idea? So it's not that it has always been suffocating and I didn't realize. I just realized now. I felt it was nice. No, it was nice. But it doesn't mean that it should be nice in that same way as it was in the past. It should be nice. It's equally nice now. No. Everything had its purpose in their own stage. So in other words, we should let progress and the needs of progress to happen organically. And progress is a very important word for us. And we should not force ourselves in an unnatural way to be inspired or to not be inspired in this or that way. Again, we are individuals, remember, radical personalism. Nor we should not be also either like overtly nostalgic about how things were in the past and only survive in the present with the hope that, well, someday everything will be again like it was in Mahaprabhu's times or when Srila Prabhupada started his movement or whatever. Each one will have their own romanticized, idyllic version of how things should be. So be careful of not being overtly attached to the past and stop being dynamic. That's not healthy, no? And that's not how life works. No? Like if your mom died last year, and you are trying to bring her physically alive again. So that's not happening. In one sense, she's alive, still alive, but in another way, not in the same nostalgic way that you are conceiving in your mind and trying to force the corpse to return, if you will. No? So similarly, everything in the Gaudiya Sampradaya is still there, still here, alive, but probably in a new shape. And we should be able to deal with that and not try and just to revive a corpse, if you will, or to be embraced by nostalgia and just live in the past, if you will. Not either go to an idyllic future without doing anything in the present. So in this way, my microcosmic situation somehow is a sample of a pointer to a wider macrocosmic paradigm, if you will, in the community. And although it's happening on a local level, it's a symptom to me. It's a symptom of what's going on beyond one's own view. No? Not necessarily, again, every detail that happened to me is happening to everyone else, but I'm speaking in a more general way, as we will see throughout the series. So, so again, the view, going for a minute to my own situation, the view that I can have from my own situation is quite interesting for many reasons, and give me a very interesting pulse of how people tend to not only see me, but see specific situations, and that gives a glimpse of which is their situation they are in that takes them to see other situation in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And for me that was interesting. One of the examples was, as I mentioned, to witness how different devotees react to my own situation, all of which is in itself was quite like epiphany-like. No, like I say, now I'm in anxiety, since at present I don't fit any of the normal boxes, or some other advertising their own lineages for me to join and derive many benefits. Some condemning me without even having spoken to me about what my actual feelings and views were, or rushing into conclusive statements without taking the necessary time to inform themselves, educate themselves about the details of any given situation, beyond mine even. Or other people choosing to remain neutral, although witnessing things they don't agree with, by remaining silent because of unwillingness to risk their present position, situation. And again, it's not about my situation, this is everywhere. Or also other people quickly supporting me are praising me for the wrong reasons, for the same wrong reasons that other people may be condemning me. So that's equally wrong, if you will, no? So as I've just explained. So for me, you can imagine, no, it was an interesting darshan exercise to witness all these dynamics around one situation and how many of these dynamics actually didn't have anything to do with reality. So anyhow, I'm in a unique vantage point, as you may have seen now, glimpse at present, through that vantage point, not better, no worse, whatever it is, I hope I may be able to share some interesting perspectives, just by being in the awkward, again, liminal space, threshold-like place I am in. And hopefully I can take advantage of uncertainty. So in this way, I hope all my awkwardness may be somehow justified by me acting properly, and by being able to extract something for the benefit and inspiration of every one of us. And at least in part, also just to conclude this particular section before entering the conclusion of today's lecture, also this present situation for me is very interesting because I'm in a situation where I have nothing to lose, basically. Mm-hmm. Which, by logic deduction, means I have everything to gain. Because sometimes this word is used negatively. You have nothing to lose because you lost everything. Yeah, but means I have everything to gain. And that things that I will gain are probably of a different nature in one sense, or a different shape than the things one lost. So at the end of the day, to be a nothing is not a problem. No, indeed, being a nothing has a glorious tradition in every spiritual tradition. When we are nothing, again, try to think about this. When we are nothing, we are in a very special position to receive everything. If you think you are everything, or you have everything, probably you cannot receive nothing. You can receive nothing. Probably you are nothing. But we want to think we are everything so as to not face our nothingness. But if we are nothing, or if we are a nothing, which we should, as we will see, even if we don't lose anything in some particular dynamics, we should remain in that situation. We are nothing. We are in a very special position, again, to receive everything from above. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, for example, the Franciscan word for this will be poverty. It will be about being poor. Doesn't mean that you live without money. It's just poor in spirit. You are nothing. You empty yourself. In the Carmelites, in Christianity as well, they will be the use nada, which in Spanish means nothing, or nihil, which nihilistic kind of nihil, which means nothingness. The Buddhists will speak about emptiness. Christ preferred to talk about in images. So he spoke of the desert. No, empty yourself. No, you are entering a place where you are voluntarily understimulated. There's not Netflix in Sahara Desert, just in case. Probably they have now, I don't know. But the point is, no feedback, no new data. You are emptying yourself. We Gaudiyas also have those ideas of emptying yourself to be fulfilled. There's this beautiful term, akinchana, in Sanskrit. Akinchana means those who have nothing, those who have no possessions. But interestingly, the Sanskrit lends itself to present the other idea. Akinchana means without possessions, or he whose all possessions is A. And A is a letter that represents Krishna. In the Gita, he says, I'm the letter A. So akinchana can mean those who have nothing, or those who only have A, who only have Krishna. Or you have this idea of kripana and kripa. Now, kripana means miserable, but in the sense of helpless. And if you are kripana, kripa will come. Mercy will come. So anyhow, some ideas of how being a nothing, it's a very advantageous and blessed situation that we all should strive to remain in that liminal space. So from this unique liminal vantage point that I am, again, which is a position of emptiness, but at the same time of fullness, I feel somehow invited by the circumstances in itself, God coming as the situation, to share some constructive observations, criticism, toward my own tradition. And as strange as it may sound through that critique, I hope that I may renew my commitment with the tradition. Although for a dualistic mind that may sound contradictory, but actually it makes lots of sense. So let me go to the last section of today's talk, which actually has to do with the title of our talk today, which is upgrading my loyalty as a Gaudiya by critiquing my own tradition. That's today's title. So before reaching that, I want to share what I've shared till now, some summary of the name of the series and my particular situation and vantage point from which I will be opening my mouth throughout the next months. So now, few words regarding, this whole series will have to do about critiquing my own tradition. Is that something negative? I'm losing my faith in the traditions. I'm going crazy and offending the very school who is nourishing me. No, that's not the idea. No. And how you can say that by doing that, you are increasing your loyalty to the tradition? So there is place for that. So give me a few minutes to try to unpack that. And by the way, at the end, I think we may have a few time for a few questions, if you may have, in case you may like to share them in the chat. I will try to address them at the end. I don't think I may be able to address them all, but anyhow, I will try to address some, and if not, the remaining ones, we will be addressing them via the different threads throughout the week till the next lecture. So let's conclude our meeting today by talking about, again, how constructive criticism, that's the meaning of critique, toward one's own tradition can be seen as one of the highest symbols of membership to that tradition. and not a sign that you are about to leave the tradition, but actually you are belonging in more and more substantial ways. So, again, due to my recent experience, as I mentioned, I've gone through a lot, and I think that those unique experiences I've recently gone through and may continue going through are putting me in a very unique situation. Again, I'm not saying that's a better situation, that's a worse situation. It's just unique for what it is. And from that unique situation, I can offer some, offer some constructive criticism to the Gaudiya Sampradaya in the spirit of service to the Gaudiya Sampradaya. That's an attempt of service. So as I already mentioned, at present, I do not belong to any institution. And by the way, you cannot belong to any institution. You can only belong to hearts. As I always like to say, you can only join a heart that happens to be beating in a particular institution in some cases. So you end up joining an institution, but actually we can only join hearts. So my particular situation, as challenged as I may be in this position, again, I'm in a privileged, I will say, chapter to analyze the condition of the Gaudiya community from Tathasta Vichar. Tathasta Vichar means like impartial perspective, not belonging to this or that particular group, etc. And from there, hopefully, offer some healthy self-criticism to the tradition, you know, how we can think about ourselves and so on. So I will say I have a right to do that as being a member of the Sampradaya. Anyone, not only me, any member of a particular school has a right to critique their own school, again, with proper words, with proper intention, by the very fact of being a member of that tradition in the spirit of service, because I appreciate the Gaudiya Sampradaya, because I love Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and I wish to continue being part of that Sampradaya. And also, I'm doing that, and also I'm doing this because I don't want people to leave the Sampradaya for reasons that could be prevented. In other words, through this discourse, I'm not trying to have people leave the Gaudiya Sampradaya, just in case, I'm clarifying. I'm not trying to say, tell all this to destroy your faith and send you somewhere else. I'm not trying to do that. But also I'm not trying to have people stay in the Sampradaya by force, of course, and naturally. So I'm concerned for those who are leaving the Gaudiya Sampradaya for reasons that could be prevented, of course. But even more so, I will say, I'm more concerned for those who stay in the Gaudiya Sampradaya for the wrong reasons. And through that, they are making of the Sampradaya something different of what the Sampradaya is supposed to be, by a wrong membership. You follow my point? I mean, that's concerning. That's even more concerning, because if you are out, you are out doing something else. But if you remain in, it seems you are in and doing what you are supposed to do, but you may be misrepresenting the whole thing. And that's concerning. So I always remember Srila Prabhupada will say, I always prefer one devotee that remains a devotee than 10 new devotees or one new devotee even. And yes, and we could like upgrade the example or extend the example saying, yes, we prefer one devotee remaining a devotee, but for the right reasons. And not just out of formality, out of separate interest, out of who knows what. We will try to go through the possible reasons that we may be, that make us be members of the Sampradaya for the wrong reasons. In the unfolding of this series, that will happen. So that's from the place I'm concerned about, and I would like to share some constructive criticism in the service of the Sampradaya. And again, there is reference from this. It's not that I'm claiming I'm doing this for the first time in the history of religious tradition or anything like that. I mean, there's many examples of this criticism, healthy criticism in the past. Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he loved his tradition the most, but he was the one who basically criticized it the most as well. Interestingly, you can make a parallel, though. The one who loves it the most criticizes it. I criticize you because I love you. We have a saying like that in Spanish. No? Because I love you, I slap you. No? Of course, not as an excuse to abuse or anything. But I remember the other day I was here in the altar having darshan of Sri Sri Gaurada Madhava, and at one point I started to glimpse at the different figures in the altar, in the parampara, and I was realizing, oh my God, all of them are doing this thing that I'm talking about. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I mean, he was non-conformist. He brought so many new thoughts and currents, Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta, what to speak of Srila Prabhupada himself, you know, adapting and bringing so many things to do. Srila Siddhar Maharaj, you know, he will describe himself not as a form maker, but as a form breaker. So everyone in our parampara is in one sense, offering this reform, criticism. Mahaprabhu himself, I mean, study his life. When he converted to Vaishnava and all what the local Hindu community was feeling around what he was about. And I mean, all of them are non-conformists. So if you want to be part of this lineage, you have to be non-conformist as well. That's your legacy. That's your tradition. And we see that even beyond our own tradition. No? Like again, going back to Christ, Jesus, he was deeply Jewish, for example, but at the same time, he stood in sharp tension with Judaism in his time. And again, all of this because he and all the examples I gave, because they loved their traditions. They knew the potential of their traditions. They knew the reach of their traditions. So they opposed to those things that were not allowing their traditions to be all they can be. Gaudiya Vaishnavism as it can be. Not only as it is. As it is, it may not be the most exciting thing yet. We have to see what all that it can be. So in other words, these people, which of course are not people, these prophets, if you want to use a proper word for them, they were very traditional in terms of their loyalty to their tradition. Yet they criticized them like nobody else. So we have to develop a proper way of accommodating this in our heads without feeling this is wrong, this is contradictory. Indeed, this is a most rare gift, to have the ability, I will say, and to have the willingness to critique your own system. That's a rare gift. Of course, I'm not saying everyone should be doing that or everyone can do that. And I'm not claiming I have that gift and I come into bring back everything to its proper place. But since it's a gift, it's not something that you can just create out of yourself. Well, I pray to have some of that gift. It's not mine. It's a gift that comes from above. So I hope I may be able to receive some of that gift, mercy, grace, and express that through this series on some degree, again, in the spirit of service. And because I feel the need that such a gift needs to be expressed. That's in our times. Again, how to show our love for our tradition. It's not only that we show appreciation for our school of thought only in terms of as much ki jais as we can shout as loudly as we can. No, that's not the only way to show your love for your tradition. Of course, that's one way. I'm not against that. But especially, since we appreciate the past contributions of our acharyas, a way of expressing our love for them and our tradition is to think about what can we do at present to keep their legacy alive and dynamic in the present for the future. That's a very big question and a great responsibility for each one of us. And for example, an idea that comes to mind regarding a recent event that will take place soon. In a few months, there will be a worldwide, they're already happening, but gradually it will be more and more established, a worldwide celebration commemorating the 150 years anniversary of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's appearance day. So big series of events are all being organized around the world. And of course, it's great and it's always beautiful and necessary to remind each other about the wonderful, limitless contribution of him and many other stalwarts like him. But also I will say, in the context of what we are talking here, I will feel that if we feel especially committed to such a non-conformist revolutionary personality or to whomever in that line, we should also pay special attention to what should be done now to honor and express his legacy in an upgraded way today. That's a very important way to praise and glorify those personalities. Now we could say, okay, let's celebrate Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's life by sitting down and critiquing our own tradition. I mean, for me, this is part, I'm joining the celebration in the form of this series. I hope you can appreciate my gift. So let's sit down and think about, in a healthy, loving way, critique our own tradition constructively and see what should have changed or what should change from the 150 years that he was born till today. Which things he brought up, which things need to be deepened or upgraded or updated. Again, not only praise for the past. No, he did that, Kijai, he did that, he did that, Kijai, at the risk of nostalgia. Yes, also that's great. But again, the past has to be tied to the present for it not to be tamaguna, if you will, just trapped into nostalgia. So we should express a criticism that is courageous, that is dynamic in the present. So we warranty a bright, sustainable future. All three stages of time need to be there. Not only let's go for to the past for 3 weeks and glorify the past, but how the past is connected to the present and the present to the future. So we should not only, again, we should glorify what someone like Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta did for sure, and there's no end to that, but also we should ask ourselves not only what he did, what he said, but what he will say now if he will be among us. You know? Like many devotees will say, Srila Prabhupada said. But a more important question is, what will Srila Prabhupada say now? In some cases, he may say the same thing. The Atma is still eternal. Krishna is still the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But many other things, I imagine he will say, he will have a different opinion. Or he will say the same things in different words. And of course, that's the duty of us. No, we shouldn't bring Prabhupada down from Golok Vrindavan to say those things to us, the second coming of Prabhupada or whatever. We should take the responsibility as members of Parampara. Now, what such person will say today in relation to all that he or she said in the past? Will someone like Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta be 108% happy with how we are acting today on the basis of the thing he established a century ago? Or maybe there is place for improvement and introspection and upgrading. And of course, there's always place for that. And that's all that should be done in service to these great personalities. So we should be very careful not to, to properly glorify everything, not to engage in over-glorification. It can happen. It can happen. Or you can overestimate. The other day I was reading one purport of Srila Prabhupada to Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he says something very interesting. He says, if someone is overestimated, that praise is only another form of blasphemy. I said, wow, interesting. No? So you can be overestimated. So the same applies with over-glorifying or overestimating the present conditions of one's own sampradaya. If you just speak about the Gaudiya Sampradaya in terms of everything is perfect and great, kijai, overestimation, And that becomes the perfect way to hide what needs to be addressed. Or if you over-absolutized relative things that the guru may have did or said in the past or whatever, and require update and upgrade, all that is a form of, again, overestimation. In one sense, there is no end to how much we can say in praise to our guardians, for sure. But in another sense, we can engage in overestimation. And according to Prabhupada, it's a form of blasphemy. Although it takes the form of praise, that's not reaching the heart of that person in the form of blasphemy, the object of our praise. So anyhow, indeed, in this connection, no, we can use overestimation as a way to hide what needs to be addressed. We could say that, bear with me a few more minutes, one form of spiritual bypassing. You have heard this term, I imagine, in the name of using spirituality to be evasive toward things that need to be addressed, basically, that get in the way of your spirituality. So one form of spiritual bypassing is basically that, is to live off from the inheritance of our ancestors while externally praising them for keeping us in the comfort zone. Oh, he did that, so great, so beautiful, ki jai, 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 jai. But actually, you are saying that so you can retain your inheritance and remain your comfort zone. And you are not actually committed with the legacy of that person. You are, in one sense, exploiting that personality. You are not serving that personality. So mediocrity, that's mediocrity. Mediocrity has to do with the complacency. One of the main ways of describing mediocrity is the complacency that comes due to the glory of the past. You follow? Now, someone did this past revolution, this past reform, this great contribution, and I embrace that in the present, overtly, but in a spirit of complacency. So I consume that. No, I exploit that. It's comfortable for me to remain in that situation. And I claim unalloyed loyalty to that from my mouth, lip service. But I'm not actually committing internally to upgrade that according to what needs in the present. So that's one of the worst types of cheating, self-cheating. So we should express some non-conformism to that. Again, someone like Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta did that. He saw this, the climate of the time. He started like to kick everything. This is not correct. You are abusing Mahaprabhu. You're misrepresenting. And again, the things happen in time over and over again. There are not only 10, 11 upasampradayas. In time, so many shades of that come in our own minds. It's not necessarily a particular official school. It's an upasampradayic psychology that we may have toward our own situation. So again, just in case, because just in case some of you may feel a little bit like nervous at this point, feeling what's Maharaj trying to say with all this, I'm not proposing here to change our foundational dogmas and teachings. You know, I'm not opening a new sampradaya. I'm just saying, proposing to change not the foundational dogma, but the eyes through which we understand those dogmas. Not the concepts, but how we are conceiving those concepts. That's a proposal, and it's a proposal, of course, that in the eyes of people who have no inner deep enough inner experience, they may feel that means to radically change the dogma. They may feel threatened by you are coming to destroy the whole tradition, but this has nothing to do with that. But some people may feel it as such, so I'm just acknowledging that, and probably this is why many, as we may have seen in the past, many transformed people are killed by someone from their own group because they are proposing something for the uplifting of the group, but which is not fully grasped by members of the group who feel threatened by that, and they feel this has to be annihilated as soon as possible. Because that people will think, oh, they are being disloyal to our group, interestingly, when very often those personalities are exhibiting profound loyalty. So profound that it's not appreciated by those who are not as loyal. And that will happen forever. It's not something that we can avoid. Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, Kanishthas and Madhyans will be always conflicting with one another, because what nourishes one is choking, suffocating the other. And one may think the other, especially the Kanishtha, will think the Madhyam is whatever, a traitor or is whatever, like not following the orthodoxy, and anyhow. That's what life is about. No? But again, there is a place for this. There is a place for critiquing as a way of love. No, that day we were hearing one quote that says that love begins in the fight with imperfection, which is a very interesting concept. No? I show you my love by addressing those things that are imperfect, that can be upgraded. Because I love you, I point to the imperfection so we can do something about it, and we all will be, and you will be in a much better situation. So because of love, we are pointing to that. So love begins in the fight with imperfection. It may be a fight, it may be a struggle. Some people may not agree with that, may protest to that. But it's a way of expressing love. And that's what I'm trying to express here. But let me quote, just before finishing, there's a very interesting, nice phrase or sentence by Richard Rohr, who is a Franciscan monk, very interesting contemporary mystic that I personally like a lot. And he's putting all that I'm trying to say in much better words. So I would like to share this. This is a brief paragraph in connection just before wrapping up. Of course, he will use some words in connection to his Christian affiliation. So according to your specific denomination and tradition, you can replace that with your own words, if you will. But he very interestingly summarizes this point. So he says like this. Because we made the gospel into an issue of obedience to laws instead of a journey into love, we got into a place where it was all about conformity, a conformity largely to the past. People are afraid of the future, which means they are afraid of yourself because you are growing up. No, you're pointing to the future. We have come to understand that the free position that we all have to seek, even institutionally, is what I call the edge of the inside. Not an outsider throwing rocks, not an insider conforming to everything that's ancient. We have given people permission to not throw rocks, but to live on the edge of the inside, where I can critique it without hating it. I can critique it without leaving it. That's high-level transformation. So I think he's putting it very concisely and clearly what we are talking about here regarding being nonconformist, expressing a healthy nonconformism, but not to the point of anarchy or being a rebel without a cause. By being a rebel with a cause. So we have a cause to become rebels, and as he said, to remain in the edge of the inside. No, we are not going outside and throwing rocks and critiquing and condemning, and this is fake and this is that, but also not remaining inside, just as conformist and following in a very and dogmatic, non-dynamic way all that is ancient, if you will. But remaining, again, inside, on the edge of the inside, without hating, without leaving, actually loving it by sharing some constructive words and criticism. So in this way, the point is that we can be profoundly identified with the love of God and still be critical. That's not a contradiction. You can have a love of God and as your ideal, and there is a place for criticism as an expression of that love. Again, criticism in a positive way, not in a negative way. We are not speaking about here promoting angry people. No, we shouldn't be angry people, righteous people, or people claiming other people to be inferior, immoral, wrong, damned for eternity, who knows what. But we are after people, or trying ourselves to become people that in a loving way will say, I don't think that's true. In a loving way. I don't think that's up to date. I don't think that's deep enough. We can go deeper. Like Mahaprabhu telling to Ramananda, Eho Bhakya Akya Kahar. That's superficial. Go deeper. Go deeper. That's not superficial, but go deeper. Still we can go deeper. So that's the type of healthy, loving criticism that we are trying to promote here. And that's a very different and necessary thing than just destructive criticism. No, constructive, committed criticism. And that's the holy shift that we need to upgrade our Gaudiya paradigm. But that will be the topic of next week's talk. Holy shift, upgrading our Gaudiya paradigm. So again, some words I want to share today with you. And although I will be, of course, mostly the one speaking in this series, I will be the one. Again, this is part of a bigger conversation. So we are having a conversation here, although it may seem a monologue. I hope this is reaching your hearts and this may create some back and forth. A dialogue, again, that we as Gaudiyas need to have with ourselves. The Gaudiya community needs to have a conversation with itself, as I put also in my recent book, in the introduction. But again, we have to begin somewhere from that conversation, or we have to continue from wherever we are. So I hope this series may represent some little contribution to this important conversation, to this important service that we all have ahead of us as members of this living school. And again, not full of resentfulness or full of anger, anarchy, but full of love and concern for one another. So thank you so much for your time. And this will be the end of today's lecture. I will address if there are any questions for a few minutes. If there are other questions, I will continue addressing them throughout the week in the thread. And also, in every lecture, if you may like to join me, we can share some basic homework, as we spoke a lot about homework done at home. But the homework will be, at least today, let's see in the next lecture what comes. But just try to think about what we spoke today. If you want, you can hear this lecture again and take some notes or whatever. And try to think what resonates in you particularly. I'm not expecting that the whole lecture has to resonate, but some specific points that you think resonate with you and you need yourself personally to go deeper into that. What can you do personally as an individual to commit yourself for contributing something so the whole overall condition of the our particular school of thought can be upgraded? It all begins again on a personal level, radical personalism. So anyhow, that will be the homework. It's not that you need to send me any written thing. I mean, if you want, no problem. But it's more something that with ourselves, if you will, in prayer. So, that said, I'm seeing here if there are any questions, or there are comments and greetings from different devotees. So, till now, I'm not seeing any question, which is okay. I'm not forcing them either. I understand that many times we may need some time to ruminate and digest. So yeah, there are no questions today. No problem. I've spoken enough. So this Krishna's arrangement for us to for now take a break. So we'll stop here. So this is the end of the first lecture. As you know, well, I'm saying this in English. It may make no sense, but I'm giving the same lectures in Spanish on Thursdays. For those of you who are bilingual, you can go there on Thursdays at the same time. So I'll see you next week, next Tuesday, at the same time. And our second class, which still will be an unpacking, an extension of what we have shared here today, we will be speaking about this notion of holy shift and upgrading our Gaudiya paradigm. So thank you so much for all of you to come. Gaudiya Sampradaya Ki Jai. Sriman Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrind Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyai Vacha Patitanam Pavane Pyo Vaishnavevya Namo Namah. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrind Ki Jai. Gaur Hari Bo.